D-Mace Vingen and Donick 102.5 The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingen here with you. Pleased to be joined on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, by Mitch Light of The Athletic to help us preview college football. Mitch, before we get started on the nuts and bolts of the Missouri-Vanderbilt matchup and more, we are taking suggestions for Willie's college game day sign. Do you have any?
Yeah, he just texted me. This is a lot of pressure. I guess I have to be PG-13, right? Willie's an adult and a respected gentleman in this town, so he can't be too risque. So
better keep it maybe even PG. Don't even do the 13.
Yeah, I once scored 10 points at Mississippi State in a basketball game. You could tout your athletic exploits, Willie.
Can we blow up the box score from that game, perhaps?
Yes, that is a good idea. Yeah, that's a good idea. Or we could maybe like turnovers. If we have any video of turnovers from Willie in college, we can.
No shortage of those.
Okay, we can show those. So I will continue to think we got what you know. We got a day and a half for this. So I hope there's
plenty
been some
of time.
Good suggestions. I hope there's been some good suggestions.
Well, you were on hand when I was introduced in that game where I scored 10 points in Starkville, and so can you explain? The PA announcer set the scene as I went into the game. This was one of three games I had double-digit points for Vanderbilt basketball.
Yes, I was a sophomore, and I was just named as my first game as the sports editor of the Vanderbilt Hustler. We went down to Mississippi State, Starkville at the Hump, and Willie checks in. First half, probably. You know, if you scored 10 points, you'd probably in both halves in that game.
And I came out on fire.
Coming in, the number was it number 10 or number
21? 21.
Number 21, Wiley DeNuke.
I started jogging in, and everybody was snickering on the bench. Like everyone was trying not to laugh because they heard it loud and clear.
I don't know if that name was like, you know, some northern name from some southern PA guy. Mississippi State, he couldn't handle the pronunciation. Although Willie's a very southern name, too. So, yes, every time I see Mississippi State basketball, I think of Wiley DeNuke.
Perhaps we can make that
work. Yeah, that could be the sign.
Yeah.
So let me ask you, Mitch, about...
Are you hearing Adam, Mitch?
Are you hearing Adam?
Barely.
We just had a short out. Go ahead, D-Mace. Happened to Adam's mic. What'd you unplug over there, Adam?
Yeah, what's going on?
It's a conspiracy. It's D-Mace. It's a conspiracy. He took out Adam's mic.
Here's another one. Another conspiracy. Okay, I'm going to go to this because I know Adam does have questions about Vandy and possibly UT. But this Oklahoma and Ole Miss game, does Ole Miss – because we saw Oklahoma last week, and listen, they were just getting their quarterback back, and he still looked a little rusty. But is this a must-win for Ole Miss?
Probably. I mean, if we're talking college football playoff, you know, could they get in losing at Oklahoma and at Georgia? The problem is those are two of their more difficult games, so it's taking away opportunity for quality wins. I think, Derek, this is one of the more fascinating matchups of the weekend just from a contrast the two teams. You know, the Ole Miss, I know they lost last week, but they scored touchdowns on their first five possessions at Georgia of 65 yards or more, like the drives. It wasn't nothing fluky there. It wasn't like a pick six or a kick return. So that offense was rolling. But Oklahoma has given up a total of 6 touchdowns in 7 games. That is amazing. 6 touchdowns in 7 games. They're good against the pass and they're good against the run. I was really impressed last week with Trinidad Chambliss. So I think we talked last week this time about his first road game after playing in Division II. I thought he handled that very well, so I don't think that will be an issue. I wonder if not the book, the scouting is out as more teams see him try to take away his weaknesses there. So I like Oklahoma in this game because that defense has been so good, and I do think Mateer in the offense is probably getting a little more comfortable as he comes back from injury.
Now, Mitch, I'm a conspiracy theorist, and if you were listening to the show at the beginning, which you probably were busy doing other things.
I work for a living. I can't, you know, I
exactly,
can't just listen
absolutely.
To you guys all day.
But I had two conspiracies that I threw out there. I have a third. Florida, okay. Napier.
Yeah.
They didn't want – I think they fired him now because they understood that this could happen again. I think they fired him now because they didn't want to get fooled again and have him win games and then have to make a decision based upon that like they did last year. I think if he would have kept losing last year, they would have fired him and moved on with him. But now that James Franklin, and now you hear about Lane Kiffin possibly, these coaches that may not otherwise be available, they are starting or possibly are available. Do you think they fired him because they didn't want to get food and to get a jump start on what can potentially be out there as far as head coaches?
Don't take this the wrong way, Derek, but you're a boring conspiracy theorist. That's not
that's too plain, huh?
Yeah, that's too close to fact right there. I think they did not, you know, I wouldn't say they were fooled last year. There were real reasons to bring Billy Napier back, aside from money and all that stuff. They played better late last year with DJ Lagway at quarterback, but they fell into the same traps this year, the same just inexplicable losses because of weird coaching decisions or poor play on the field. So I think there's no doubt that they wanted to get ahead of it and do this. But there's also an argument to say even if they played better as the year progressed, they probably still would have made a change because, like, we've been through this again there. But, yeah, I think there's no doubt he was basically given one mulligan last year and was not going to get another one this year.
Mitch Light is with us. My headset is working.
Good job.
So let me ask you the question that I was going to ask before someone cut my mic. Maybe another conspiracy.
That's a better conspiracy than Derek's, I'll tell you that.
Well, just to be clear, Mitch, one of Derek's conspiracies earlier is that the Franklin Police Department purposely waited until today to release the body cam footage of Jay Cutler's arrest last year so that he could not be the guest picker on College Game Day.
Hey, just saying.
See, that one's exciting at least. You know, it's a little salacious. I don't believe it, but there's something that's interesting. Yeah, okay.
So let's talk about this Missouri-Vanderbilt matchup. I'm looking at the matchup within the matchup of Diego Pavia versus the Missouri front seven. The Tigers are one of the best teams in the country at blowing up opposing backfields. So how do you see this matchup playing out?
That's interesting because Pavia's strength is, and I think Jesse Palmer like kind of referred to on the broadcast last week, like I don't know how he saw that guy. He's got like eyes in the back of his head. He just does enough to elude a would-be rusher, gets out of trouble, and finds a guy downfield or finds a guy or has running room there. So I think that is going to be very important. We all know Vanderbilt's offensive line is much improved. But again, you know, you've got to stop the negative plays. Vanderbilt has been one of the best teams on third down this year. It's because they've been pretty good on first and second down. But if you play a Missouri team and you have negative plays and you're 12, third, and 12, obviously football becomes a lot more difficult. So, yeah, I agree with you. That's going to be very important for Vanderbilt, for Diego Pavia to avoid those negative plays.
Mitch, another thing that Missouri does very well is run the ball. Tell us about where they – because they have a running back that has really been a nice fit for them, and it seems like that is going to be something that the Commodores are going to have to key on.
Yeah, Ahmad Hardy is a transfer from Louisiana Monroe, was the Sun Belt Freshman of the Year. Interesting story behind this kid. From small town in Mississippi, no offers basically out of high school. Junior college in Louisiana Monroe was his only FBS offer. So he goes there as a true freshman, was great last year, and has been very, very good this year. He had 100-plus yards in his first five games, but only 52 versus Alabama and 58 versus Auburn, two good defensive teams. The key here is, though, he is really good in yards after contact. He's seventh nationally in yards after contact. And if there's one area where Vanderbilt has not been very good this year, it's allowing big plays yards after contact. Vanderbilt is 10th worst among Power 4 teams. So there's, 70 Power 4 teams. So Vanderbilt's about 60th in allowing yards after contact. We saw it wasn't necessarily after contact last week because the LSU receiver made everyone miss, but we saw in that long touchdown making something out of nothing. That's what Vanderbilt has to prevent with Ahmad Hardy, having him bottled up with two or three guys, him fighting through and gaining big yards, because that's really what he excels at.
What do you think of Preble? It's an interesting story how Preble ends up being their guy because there was another quarterback in the mix, I believe, that got injured early in the season. But what are the strengths and weaknesses of Preble? Because looking at the stats, he's been sacked a lot, right? But he can really run.
Yeah, Sam Horn's the guy you were talking about. Not the old Boston Red Sox slugger Sam Horn, different Sam Horn, who got hurt. So Preble is a good athlete. He was used at Penn State just situationally, kind of running the ball. And he put up gaudy stats early this year throwing the ball against some inferior competition. As the competition's gotten stiffer, he's been prone to make some mistakes. I think he's had two interceptions in each of his last two games. He's very good running the ball. You know, he's just, like I said, that's what he did at Penn State, and he can really hurt you there. So Vanderbilt needs to disguise defenses, get pressure on him, force him to make mistakes. But he is a guy. He's good. And I know when there was some uncertainty about Diego Pavia coming back with that lawsuit, I know he was a guy that Vanderbilt was looking at or, you know, was going to potentially kick the tires on as a potential transfer to replace Diego Pavia.
Adam was reading an article with, of course, the spotlight being on this game on Saturday, asking the question if Vanderbilt is overrated or perhaps underrated.
It was on The Athletic.
Yes. So we thought this would be right up your alley. Yeah.
David Ubbin and Austin Mock.
And I started it with perspective of, Mitch, the last time that Vanderbilt had the college game day, the only other time they've hosted it, there's just no comparison in the depth and talent of this Vanderbilt team compared to that. But that's not directly answering the question.
Yeah, that team was all smoke and mirrors. You know, just a lot of defense, especially the offense. That 2008 was, the offense was statistically among the worst in the SEC. So specifically what David Ubbin, the story was about, we have, you know, Austin Mock does our, he's kind of like our analytics guy. And for whatever reason, in Austin Mock's model, Vanderbilt all season has not been rated highly. Now, they're rated highly in most other analytic models, like on ESPN with Bill Connolly's S&P Plus, they've been high all year. So basically, David Ubbin asked him, like, why is Vanderbilt in the 30s in years when it's, you know, 10th in the AP poll and the teens and all these other analytical models? And, you know, Austin's answers was something about, like, the Alabama game statistically, they weren't great offensively and all this stuff. So I didn't really follow. I mean, I read it. I didn't, you know, there's reasons. The model is not biased. Just stats and stuff like that. So, is Vanderbilt overrated or underrated? I think probably properly rated. I think it's a top 15 team no matter what happens this week. I think Missouri's a top 15 team. But I'll agree with your basic point, Willie. There's really no comparing this roster to that one last time Vanderbilt was sort of in the national spotlight.
Mitch Light of The Athletic has been our guest on D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick. He joins us every Thursday to help us preview college football. Mitch, great stuff as always. We'll catch up next week.
All right, take care, guys. Thanks.
615-737-1025. We will get into the Tennessee Titans coming up next. I teased something earlier. We haven't gotten to it yet, and we will get to it coming up next. 615-737-1025. Vandy fans, it's time to party. The Commodores are ranked in the top 10, and ESPN's College Game Day is coming to Nashville. To celebrate 1025, the game will be broadcasting live tomorrow from noon to 6 at the new Party Foul near Vandy in Midtown at 2031 Broadway. Plus, we will be giving away a pair of tickets to see the sold-out game against Missouri this Saturday. So come on out to the all-new Party Foul in Midtown tomorrow from noon to 6.